Ones is an adventure, a wild romp through ancestral holy lands. Your search there brings a treasure. Creativity makes your ordinary world expand. Our guest today is Lindsay Mack, creator of Soul Tarot, a radical reinterpretation of the tarot as a healing tool. She holds extraordinarily popular sellout Soul Tarot workshops, and she's host of the Tarot for the Wild Soul podcast, which I am a huge fan of. I truly, deeply, madly love Lindsay's heart-centered approach, and her beautiful voice alone can make you feel seen and safe and held. So it's a real treat to have her on the show to talk about the Three of Wands with us today. So let's get started. Welcome, Lindsay Mack. It is such, it's just like such a blessing to have you on the show. I am such a huge fan of your work, and I'm so excited to have you here.
Hi, I'm so delighted. This is just the greatest, and I mean, vice versa in the hugest way to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, so with this show, we love to just dive right into the cards.
I can't wait.
And so today we're talking about the Three of Wands. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of people find this card really confusing because the Two of Wands and the Three of Wands look so similar. It's hard to tell the difference between them. It took me many years to get this card. And so... and also my relationship to it is still evolving. I'm still learning. I'm still trying to understand it. What about you? What was your initial response to?
Well, when this was the card that I was asked to do, I was so excited because I think this is so confusing and actually like deceptively simple. This card started to make more sense to me once I did my own critical thinking about what the wands actually were. Because I've always felt a little dissatisfied with the wands in general. They didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. And where I wound up finding a little bit more clarity for myself was when I started to just look at them, not necessarily as related to one particular thing like work or passion or sexuality, but just this general sense of deep root system. And if we look at each suit, which you don't have to do, but I find just really interesting. I don't even know if it's like the way to do it because there's no one way to do anything with this. But if we look at it as being connected to cardinal fire with Aries, like Aries' whole relationship is, well, who am I? What am I doing? Is Emperor? What kind of space am I taking up? Like wands are so much about the root system. How do you work in relationship to your body, to your energetic reserves, which I think is a huge question right now, especially right now. And so when I started to see that the two and the three of wands, again, for me, because like who the fuck cares? Everybody has their own opinion and everybody's right. You know, that's the beautiful thing about tarot. But like when I started to see them as a passage of time or a progression and connected them as almost twins, two and three, it started to bloom open for me a little bit more.
Yeah, I love what you're saying about root system. And I too also think of the wands very much as being about the plant world, being about trees, being about flowers, being about the plant world, and how the plant world works as a conduit to bring up the nutrients from the soil and to connect into the soil and the earth, and then also to call down the light from heaven as like a nourishing force and transmute that and to maintain the ecosystem with that. So yeah, I really see that with this card. I thought we could take a little second to just remind people what this card looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for those of you who don't remember, this card with the Rider-Waite Coleman Smith version of the deck looks like a guy standing with his back to the reader, and he's wearing red and green robes with three tall wands staked in the earth around him, and he's looking out over a golden plain off to the mountains in the distance. So I was wondering, if we didn't even know about the textbook meanings of this card, when you look at this card, what feelings come up for you?
somebody who is rooted in what they're in now and is waiting for the next thing.
Lindsay, that is so in alignment with what I feel too. I totally feel that way.
Of course it is. Yes, absolutely. It's like that. And it's super duper 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 specific, right? Like in terms of the human experience, like we're not in this all the time and we're prone to rushing. And so I really feel like this card helps to teach us how to even be conscious or aware of that experience. Like, cause we're always like, I know all this. All right, great. Fuck it. When's the next thing? And like, it's really like this beautifully divine tension and marriage of these two experiences. Does not surprise me that that is your sense of it as well.
Yeah, well, looking at it, I feel like it's almost like someone's standing and looking at their ancestral homelands, and there's a feeling of being planted and rooted, and there is a sense of accomplishment, like this is something that we have created together, or this is something that I feel a deep sense of belonging to. But there's also a sense of something still coming or something about to happen, something growing and something opening.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about the numerology.
Okay.
So this is a 3 card. How do you interpret this in relation maybe to the other 3s or the 3s in general? Mm-hmm.
They're complex, that's for sure. I do think that there's this sense of this synthesis between having offered something and being invited to receive something new. Because I think that that's ultimately, like when you take Empress, for example, which is 3, out of the binary of anything having to do with the more overcultural, like feminine woman, mother, anything like that, which there's a place for that, but there's also, that doesn't include everybody. So going a little further is always important. Really, it's an invitation to receive, because receiving is really challenging. And so I think that all the 3s involve this sense of having given something and there being some kind of weird invitation to receive, whether it's something totally esoteric and out of the realm of the material, or just being open to a kind of expansion above and beyond what is in front of us. You know, and I think all of them have that in common with each other in the loosest degree. What do you think about the 3s?
You know, what's so inspiring to me about what you're saying is that normally just kind of on a 3 basics level, I think of the 3 as being like creative and generative.
Yes.
And so what is exciting to me about the relationship between that idea of creativity and what you're saying, which is like giving and receiving, is thinking about how creativity is a process of giving and receiving. Like it's receiving inspiration, it's receiving influence from your world, from your mediums, from spirit. And then it's also about giving and giving back to the world and acting as a conduit, which I think is what the wands are, like trees are. You know, the wands are conduits for energy, but you also transmute that energy as you work through it. So you're kind of this nexus of giving and receiving. And I think what I'm hearing from what you're saying is that that doesn't work unless you're doing both. You're not just giving and you're not just receiving, but you're giving and receiving. And that's what makes it possible to be creative or to be in the world in the way this card wants.
I think so. When I think about 3, like I'm at the top point and this experience of giving, receiving is just moving through me constantly. And I'm either in one or in the other. And I think that's cool to think about, because I think most of us have a very challenging time receiving anyway. And yet in order, and you know this so well, but in order to give, you have to be expanding your capacity to receive, which is so confronting. So it's just this constant, like your channel can't help but kind of grow and get more robust in that way. And I think it has everything to do with what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And just again, that image of the tree, like as you're saying, that's giving and receiving simultaneously, always at the same time. You know, yes. It's giving off oxygen, it's receiving sunlight.
Into action. towards the new, the ships set sail. In spite of my momentum, this might fail. Into the unknown, inwards and beyond, I carry close.
Did you have any symbols from the card that you think of?
Well, there's two pieces. I am always very fascinated in the Smith Rider at the person's, at least until we get to the court cards, they never really look at the wands. Like, it's just always, like, that's what's so impactful about the page. It's like the first fucking time that the character or any archetype is like, oh, this wand is a part of me. I want to work with it, not make it do what I want it to do, which I know for myself, that's how I treated my body for the majority of my life. It was just like, oh, we will do this thing. I will not check in with you about whether or not you want to do it. I won't take care of you. I want to do it. So we're going to do it, you know? And so I feel like I'm so fascinated always at the idea that the hand is connected to this wand and the Smith Rider, and the two others are rooted in, but there's no actual contact or connection, but it's there. You know, it's not exactly a co-creation yet, but of all the things that really stick out to me, also in other decks, there's often water and boats, and that's always really interesting to me. But the hand on that third wand, there's something in that, I think, even beyond the capacity to language it, that really sticks out to me always.
What you said about the page being the first time the wand is directly addressed just blew my mind. And I'm going to have to go spend more time with that page. But I was also thinking about how in the Thoth deck, this card is called Virtue. And so it really got me to think a lot about this idea of moral goodness, which is what virtue is, and about morality being about balancing your own individual needs with the needs of the collective. So I was seeing the suit of wands often is also about authority or understanding what authority is, but also because of that connection for me with plants, it's also about the stewardship of the land. So for me, authority implies responsibility, first of all. That's one of the ways that we gain authority, is through taking responsibility, but also about knowledge earned through experience. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about if this card is virtue, or it represents virtue, then that means it's about behaving with integrity and truth, and even acknowledging that that's not always easy to know what that is, but kind of wrestling with that and setting the intention to kind of earn that authority and earn that stewardship.
Mm, what a wonderful way to look at that. You know, in your deep connection to tree medicine and this idea of both giving and receiving, and the ones potentially being this beautiful opportunity for us to check in with, well, how am I moving? What kind of action am I taking? Like, what is being asked of me as a tree? What's part of my job, right? Like, this idea that the wands, and especially the three in light of virtue, could be an anchor for us around really leaning into our aligned responsibility, our stewardship in the lands that we're living on, most of which, you know, I'm a descendant of a colonizer on this land, which I think is really powerful to think about. I'm just digging what you're saying. There's a lot of deep, there's a lot of medicine in that. That's really, really fabulous. Love it.
Well, thank you. I'm blushing. So do you have a favorite? You'd mentioned this a little bit before. Do you have a favorite version of this card that you feel like really nails what you think this card is about?
I do, and I'll be brisk about it, but I have three. I like three. I love the This Might Hurt tarot.
Oh, I've never heard of that. This Might Hurt.
It's amazing. the wands are represented as these three writing utensils kind of in this cup on a desk where the archetype is sitting on the desk, not working on what they're working on, and kind of like looking out the window at the water where these boats are. Super into it. And I feel like it's such a wonderful expression of this card, is really being like, what happens when you're a channeler and a creator and you are told, don't do your creation, just be. So I think that's really powerful. I love the Next World Tarot version, which is called Preparation. And it's essentially somebody in this library reading all of these super important and crucial texts on anti-racism, on like all of these educators, like preparing yourself, educating yourself. I love that. And I love Tarot of the Holy Spectrum, which is somebody who is in a boat rowing themselves to another place. So I'm attracted weirdly to a lot of the water imagery in this card, which is, it's interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's so wonderful that you mentioned that water connection, because I was also going to bring up one with water from the Light Seers version of this card, the Light Seers Tarot, where there's a girl with a surfboard standing on the dunes in front of the ocean, and there are three flaming torches planted in the ground around her. And there's this feeling that she's about to go surfing, and she's looking out and thinking about what she's going to do on the waves out there as the sun sets and the torches cast their light upon the water. And I really love this idea about this card being about riding the waves, but surfing is so much about your relationship to this powerful force, this overwhelming force, and riding that and working with it in the same way that you might ride a horse, you know, in the most humane and beautiful sense of connecting with the powers of nature. But what do you think this water connection is? It so often comes up in these cards, in all versions.
I know. I think that this card, in a very spiralic way, not super linear, but spiralic, is very connected and reminiscent to temperance. And temperance is, at least in the Smith Rider, so much a weaving of fire and water, right? Like, we have the flaming crown, we have the symbol of the sun on the angel, we have the symbol of fire on the angel, we have this like rising crown again, like in the background, and we have the angel standing in water, right? Balancing with one foot on the rock and one foot kind of just out in the water. And fire and water, unless you're intending to make steam, are the only two elements you cannot hold in your hand at one time, if you're counting airs, which I do. But it's also the same marriage that we see in Queen of Wands, because queens are water and wands are fire. So there's something of the alchemical and the elemental and temperance, which I think you learn over a lifetime, just straight up. Like, I don't think, as much as I can report on how I view temperance, like, it'll probably change. You know, it's like so powerful and complex and is literally connected to the word time. It's so slow. But temperance is ultimately, I think, exactly what you just mentioned with surfing. It's like learning over your lifetime as you get through line one and you're like, I've learned it all, I've done it all. And then you kind of have to leave the chariot to go into line two. And then you find yourself in temperance being like, oh my God, I'm completely unlearning, being invited to unlearn or undo everything I've learned about how I make things happen through my will. And now this is about me having the wisdom and discernment to understand, you know, the only way to really marry fire and water together is if you're open to something greater than you to help you hold it. So this idea of Three of Wands being connected to that and you bringing Light Seer's Tarot into it, for me, links so beautifully with my weird temperance sibling relationship to this card, because I do feel like the only way I really move through Three of Wands is if I remember, like, I can try to force an expansion in this card, or I can completely bow over to it and say, the horizons that are opening up for me can be a part of my willingness to be of service, can be a part of me saying, Spirit, I'll go wherever you desire me to go. And like, how do I surf these waves on my own, it's really hard. With divine, it's a lot easier. So there's something in this about like learning a sense of humility, learning how to marry these two elements that like don't go together really unless we're talking about magic. And I love like the geek that I am. Any tarot card that is in a suit that has another element present in it, like Six of Swords and the Smith Rider being an air card but having water in it, I like that a lot because I think that it's really interesting. There is some kind of like divine thing with this, like this moment before a big takeoff that I think is, doesn't feel like temperance, but there's something in it of temperance to me, like a flavor of temperance in there somehow. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that temperance connection. And I totally see that just about the balancing. But also, I feel like in temperance, there's a mastery implied, like a real knowledge of how to use this and how to do this, like a master alchemist or artist or painter. But then also that humility of working with mm-hmm. the divine, working with the forces of nature. And that's part of what mastery is about opening yourself up to that humility and working with rather than trying to dominate.
I love it. Hell yeah.
So if this card comes up in a reading, like getting kind of practical here, what might be the things we have to look forward to, or what might be the more positive, quote unquote, aspects of what we might say if it came up in a reading for a client, for instance?
I mean, what I would say is that this is such a sacred, exciting time of integration and potential. And, you know, of course, the client may not immediately know or have even honored this about themselves or their process, but like in some way, the client has reached this kind of energetic pinnacle. Like they've done something, they've accomplished something, and there is some kind of spiralic graduation for sure. And that there's an opportunity to really lift up their own process and honor how far they've come. And also, they're being possibly invited to make space to be a student, to be completely new and fresh and baby deer style. They've done something, they know it. And yet there's something in their soul that's crying out for some kind of new experience. And I think practically what is so nice about Three of Wands, because it's a minor, is that we can invite the client potentially to both just hang out in the weird sweetness of that stretch and also dick around with things that make them feel like total baby deers. Like if they've never just picked up watercolors and painted, what's that like? Like literally grooving new neural pathways. Like what makes you feel like, oh my God, what the fuck? You know, like it's really good for us to feel like I'm terrible at this. You know, that's a crucial part of life. And so, yeah, I would say like, can you hang out in the both end of that? Like, can you play? And I think this is so important in our world that's so driven by capitalism. And like, what is this doing for us? Like, what is something you could do that doesn't have anything to do with how you serve, make money? Like, maybe there's zero connection to it at all, you know, nothing. So I think there's room for both things here, like both just holding the weaving of those two pieces of kind of mastery and experience and also like brand new horizons, and also how can you play with that in your everyday life? Like what are some things that you could do or that you're currently doing that maybe you haven't even recognized as being a part of this work?
Yes, yes, and yes. I underscore and underline all of that. You know, the point that I had that came up for me really, it does a sweet dance, I think, with what you're saying. And that I was thinking about this idea of adventure, how this card speaks to adventure for me. And I was looking up the definition of adventure. And it means to engage in hazardous and exciting activity, especially the exploration of an unknown territory. And so I was thinking of this card. You know, there's so many hazardous, exciting, unknown places to explore that it's not just about adventurism into the world, but maybe into the wilds of our own heart or into a new project. Or we might be becoming more politically active than we've ever been before. And there's risk involved in adventure. An adventure is a risk, but it's worth it because in this card also is a land of promise and that sense of mastery and connection. And so whenever this card comes up in a reading, I feel like the querent is being asked, where is the adventure calling them? And are they willing to take the risks?
Yes. Adventure is such a huge part of this card. It could not. And like that word, utilizing that word with a client or the querent is such a chef's kiss because that word unlocks so much for people.
What about the problems, though? I mean, like, what about the parts that might be more challenging? I mean, adventure sounds like a fun, sexy word, but it might not always feel like that. Or if this card maybe comes up in reverse, what might be coming up for you around that?
There are absolutely beautiful and brilliant opportunities in this card that are very close, probably at hand for most people, whether right side up or reverse. This is a very uncomfortable state to be in. If we are uncomfortable being new at something, if we're uncomfortable not having something come to us really naturally, if we're very used to being kind of in our brilliance and we don't challenge that so much, that can be challenging. And depending on a literal infinite myriad of issues. Do we have trauma? Do we have stuff about money? Do we have stuff about travel? Do we have stuff about, do we feel, was it safe for us to take risk to do adventurous stuff? You know, it's possible that it wasn't. So I think the card could be an incredible ally in helping to unearth our stuff around this kind of evolutionary adventure taking. And it could come up again in a huge spectrum of experiences. But I think I love the tarot for that because it can be one of the most effective mirrors to the things that are actually supposed to be unearthed, like that we're meant to befriend. For anyone listening who's thinking like, ooh, like I think that's the point. It's already there, just now allowing you to kind of make contact with this thing that's been under the earth of your being is okay, you know, and making space for that, seeing that wherever that comes up for us is like 90% of being able to transmute and heal it. So I think it's even the problem is still an opportunity to evolve.
Right. So if I'm understanding you correctly, this idea that perhaps the more challenging aspect might be if you feel that this adventure is very daunting and we seize up a bit and maybe feel immobilized, unwilling to take the risks, or maybe feel creatively blocked in some way.
Yes.
But that you're saying that the card spirit is kind of gently nudging you to work with that, and that ultimately that is medicine that they're bringing you by asking you to,
yes,
is to feel into that hurt a little bit.
Can I share a personal story? It's quick.
I would love. Please do. Okay. I would love it if you did.
Okay. So I was never incredibly good at it, but like a decent in an amateur way, like painter and artist, decent. And my mother is very, very gifted at it. And she, while I was growing up, tended to project a lot of her own deep stuff about her perfectionism in art onto me. And so I very rarely engage with art because I've really internalized this, like it has to be perfect or else it's worthless thing. And I don't even share my art with anyone. So it's literally just an inherited thing. And very recently, the last 6 months or so, I've been hearing from spirit when I'm like, you know, what would be of highest use today? Or very often when I'm kind of hearing to decompress, I've been told, please paint. I appreciate what it's doing, but it is a nightmare. It's not enjoyable at all, actually. It's so upsetting and frustrating because pretty much with every stroke of the brush onto the paper, I'm being asked to essentially undo part of what I was taught. And it's kind of like that work of recognizing, what did you inherit maybe about adventure, about risk, about fucking up, about not doing things perfectly, about, like, you know, whatever it is. And how can you see it as part of your sacred work to undo some of that and maybe touch in with what your truth is about it? Because I really like to paint. I just happen to have a lot of stuff around it because of how I was raised. So for some people, they have nothing around that. And for some people, they have a lot around it. So I think hopefully that helps to kind of seal in what I'm talking about, like this idea of getting, like, as a sacred opportunity to shift some of the stories and the challenges around, like, I don't want to take a risk because I might do it imperfectly, which I think is a big part of this card too.
What I hear you talking about in that story is about the creative process. You know, that this card is very much about the creative process.
Totally.
And what came up for me listening to that was thinking about, you know, I just finished a book, it came out last year. It was fucking excruciating. I mean, writing is excruciating for me. It's so painful for me. It is not fun for me at all. I have to come up against walls and walls of self-doubt and anxiety and leap over them every time. And it doesn't feel easier. I mean, there are moments of lucidity or pleasure, but I would say, you know, 80% of the time, it's just me, yeah, trembling, crying.
Torture.
Suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know a lot of writers who feel that way. And yet there's something that compels us to create. Mm-hmm. Because that's our nature as human beings, even if no one ever sees it. And, you know, even if it's just painting for painting's sake. And I think one of the reasons why we are compelled, even though it's so painful, is because underneath that pain is something so beautiful and true and authentic, and where we open ourselves up to really connect to what spirit wants to move through us specifically as individuals. And that's so scary. Because there is all of this, you know, mother wound and father wound and social wound and, you know, value wound and capitalism wound and white supremacy wound, all of that is on top of that sweet spirit of creation that's kind of at the center. And we have to go fight those demons every time.
I mean, amen to every word of that. Oh, man. Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, there's where the problem is, folks, if you're wondering what the hard part is. That card. Mm-hmm. But in but in that problem, a lot of beauty as well. I mean, we've been talking about this a little bit, but what questions might this card ask us? Like, what does this card want us to learn? How does it want us to grow?
Yeah, I think we have been talking about that. I think, are you available to let yourself try something different, to let yourself bring in something new in whatever form it might come up around? It might be something super internal, it might be something very external. You know, willingness to be uncomfortable, and also something related to your thoughts about adventure. Like, can it be exciting for you? We're all so fucking afraid to be excited because we don't want to get our hopes dashed, but it's a radical thing to be willing to be excited. And I think there's some of that in here too. What do you think?
I'm thinking about, obviously, you know, the concept of white supremacy is coming up a lot right now for good reason. And there's a list of, like, qualities of white supremacy. And one of them is this unwillingness to be uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So the whole society is designed so that, you know, white people, for instance, don't feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think part of interrogating that and banishing that and getting rid of that is allowing ourselves to be uncomfortable. And that's really what adventure is, because adventure, yeah, there's some parts where it's rainbows and you're walking through the woods and the meadows and the sunlight is coming down, but there's also the treacherous rocks and seas and monsters. And you, so, you know, the card is calling you to really let yourself go into all of it and maybe look for the points where you are uncomfortable and then do some real healing work around that, some medicine work around that, which is not always going to feel good.
Amen to that again.
So, quick editorial note, I just want to make really clear that I am not talking about anti-racist work as an adventure for white people. People of color are suffering and dying because of white supremacy. So I'm not saying that anti-racist work is a fun adventure. What I'm saying is that the concept of adventure is an aspect of this card, and that risk, speaking as a white person here, and learning how to lean into the discomfort of that risk is truly the very least of what I should be doing when it comes to anti-racist work, or that any white person should be doing. So I hope that makes sense. So what about political situations or historical situations that come up for you that might really clarify what this card is about for people?
I mean, I don't know how clarifying it will be, but the thing that I mean, we're in this card right now. We are in this card right now. Say what you will about, like, we're in other cards too. We're totally in Tower. We're totally in Judgment. We're in a million different things right now, but we are really here because as a white helping professional, we have gone as far as we can go without being more thoughtful, without being more conscious, without listening, that there are so many more people who are coming to the forefront of the conversation who are being centered right now in their brilliance and their genius. And I think that while honoring the discomfort, the interrogation, and the obvious root system of the trauma and pain that is at the heart of this, I am also very excited because it's a damn long time coming and it can only mean good. So this idea of, okay, how can I lean into my discomfort where appropriate and also make space, not necessarily feel like I have to do everything, not necessarily feel like everything is for me. And I think that I'm coming at it again from the lens view of a white helping professional who's also a spiritual person, because I think this conversation might be different for white therapists. I don't know. But we can look at this time in history in all of the directions and spectrums that it comes up in, because again, it is absolutely a Tower time. It is absolutely a Judgment time. And it is totally a Three of Wands time. And I think the more people begin to marry, despite what their nervous systems say about how uncomfortable this is and how horrible or how whatever, it's like, it's necessary. What do you think?
I mean, first of all, voila. Yes, here it is. That's exactly true. But I thought of, well, there's this Chilean economist, Manfred Max Neef, and he talks about the need for, rather than economic growth, economic development. And he talks about kind of the differences between those two. And the idea that is development is about people, not objects. So growth is about acquiring more, doing more, having more economy, more, you know, GDP, like raising, which is not possible on a finite system, which the planet is.
Yeah.
And so I love this idea about development being about people, not objects. And the idea of development in general in relation to this card. So it, adventure doesn't necessarily mean pushing radically forward and, you know, toppling all the systems behind, but fleshing out, nourishing, nurturing, developing, looking for the places that need healing, looking for the places that need amplification, looking for the places that need tending, and that can be an adventure too. You know, that can be a strengthening process too.
Hell yes to that. And the word that came to mind while you were saying that was like longevity, like really understanding that it's not like, oh, we stop because we did it. You know, that it's like a constant experience. Like it's now a part of the experience, you know, and I love that.
Yeah. Like thinking about how, you know, we live on this finite system and there's no place for people to adventure to anymore. You know, there's like, there's no place to colonize. It's all been done.
It's all been done.
And so now the development, the shifting, the dismantling and rebuilding is what needs to happen. And this is an invitation.
Hell yeah.
What about myths, movies, music, like pop culture?
Okay. I just need everyone to be prepared for the level of cheese that's about to go down. Because I really,
that's fine too.
I sat with this and I cannot come up with a better example, even though I am sure that they are out there. I know that they are. But to me, a wonderful example of this can be found in The Sound of Music, actually. And there are a number of songs and sequences in that movie that are very Three of Wands. Are you familiar with that movie?
I have to admit, I've never seen The Sound of Music, but I've heard so many great things about it. And now I really want to see it. I really want to see
it. Yeah, it's perfectly fine. The central arc of the story is this woman who is a nun and who is very devoted to being a nun, but absolutely does not fit. And so she's kind of lovingly sent away to be a governess for this widower and his seven children. And there's a song called I Have Confidence that is really her just verbalizing, I'm so excited to do this. I've always longed for adventure, but I'm so scared. And I'm essentially going to plug into this confidence that I have whatever I need to do this. And literally, like, the beginning of the film is her like running up this hill and just desiring to be a part of the world in this way. And so there's a lot in Sound of Music, at least like spiritually, that makes me think of this. And then for some reason to me also, the manned space missions of NASA, like how we literally sought to put someone on the moon, there's a lot of Three of Wands in that, especially in the Apollo 13 mission, where really everything that could go wrong, like went wrong on that mission. And the idea of all of those people coming together to provide procedures and fit for things that they never even simulated to help people who were literally up in space, and it worked. I don't know. There's something very, very meaningful for me, oddly, about Apollo 13 mission, because I feel like it's like such a weird symbol for life. It's like you assume you're going to go to the moon, and then it becomes about really everything you do to kind of make it back to Earth, and like all of the weird things that come in. Isn't that so much like adventures? Like, we think we're going somewhere, but it's never about the trip. It's about all the stuff that comes up on the way to the trip. And those two examples felt very impactful while being a little cheesy. I do think that, like, they click for me.
I mean, we like cheese. I love cheese. I mean, I'm trying to wean myself off, but so I think that's great. So I have two. I have one that's kind of cheesy and one that's a little more highbrow. But so my cheesy one is, and I guess this is pretty obvious, Indiana Jones, right?
Oh, yeah.
Talking about some adventure. So
of course.
Something great I've got to share about this is from a friend, a brilliant writer and witch, Johanna Hedva, who's also an astrologer. And she talks about how when your chart ruler planet is activated by a transit or does something special, you know, moves into its own sign, she says it's like the hero of your life is moving through the sign, and it's like the music from Indiana Jones starts playing, like dun 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 dun. And so I think about, you know, when you're doing something really hard, you know, when Indy is in the snake pit and then he gets the idea of like how he's gonna get out of that, and you hear the theme song, you know, and he starts swinging from the vines. And I feel like there's a real triumphant song mm-hmm. that plays when this card comes into being. And then my highbrow version is, well, first of all, thinking about the idea of the essay, which comes from the French to go, to essay, to meander. And so you're essentially going on a walk through your thought process. And so this card might be the essay card, right? You're exploring. Mm. But I was also thinking about the Situationists, who are the avant-garde revolutionary artist movement from the 60s in France. And they had this thing called a derive, which is where they would wander through their neighborhoods, which were very well known to them, obviously. But they do it as if it's an adventure. They do this in groups where they kind of wander around and go against the rules. You know, so instead of looking at a stop sign like, well, we know this is a signifier for cars to stop, seeing it in an imaginal way, or, you know, using the space in a way that's different from what it was intended to be, which we're seeing now with all the protests, you know.
Absolutely.
People sweeping into public spaces and using them in different ways than they were maybe intended for.
I'm all about it.
So, final question. If this card comes up in a reading and you want to call up some of this energy, or you want to work with it ritually, what are some rituals, spells, ideas that you could do to make the most of it?
So I am a Virgo rising, and as such, my magic is in the practical pieces. Can you make, as a devotion, as an act of ceremony, your engagement in anything that makes you feel, especially this is, I think, good medicine for the pandemic, what is in front of you that you might not even be seeing, that if you were to engage with it, if you were to play with it, might bring up a sense, A, of adventure for you, and B, evolutionary discomfort? Like, is there something in your field? Could you dick around with playing the piano? Could you play with trying to play the guitar? Like, could you learn how to teach yourself a chord on the guitar today? Is there a way to, like, again, painting for painting's sake? I know for myself, even though I work a creative job technically, I also can be divorced from my own personal creative work when it's not for my job. Like, I've had to work very hard actually to be like, no, this is just for me. Really, anything can be a spell. I often do that when I do art of any kind, where I'll say a little blessing over it and say, may this call me into being, making friends with play again. You know, may I be available to be uncomfortable in a growthful way in all the things that I do. I love witches who can come up with like really beautiful poetic spells. But again, I'm just like, not to say that Virgo risings can't do that, but I'm much more in the realm of like, well, what could I just do today and make it into magic, you know?
Well, I think a lot of the time, the trouble with really beautiful poetic spells is that they stay kind of in your spell book, and we often don't do them because they're so elaborate, and almost all of us are always so busy all the time. So I think what's important is that you do it and that you engage with it. I was thinking about the concept of the derive as being kind of a spell, and, you know, it's an unplanned journey through a space where participants drop their everyday relations and just let themselves be drawn by the attractions of the terrain. So that means, how can you go on a derive of anything, like a derive of your date, your first date, or a derive of your neighborhood, or a derive of your creative process, where instead of having it be what it's always been and just doing the same things you've always done in that space, letting yourself be drawn, letting yourself explore, letting yourself find the wild spaces in the place that is always so familiar to you. So that's one thing. And as always, there'll be links in the show notes. And then I was also thinking about working with stones, like fire stones, like bloodstones or carnelian or lava rock. And for me, working with stones means putting them on your altar, sitting with them, adding them to spell bags, contemplating them, touching them, spending time with them. So it means literally sitting with them. So taking a stone, like a bloodstone, sitting with it for 10 minutes, looking at it closely, feeling what you feel, thinking what you think, touching it, noticing all of its subtleties, paying attention to what thoughts and feelings and imaginings come up for you while you're holding the stone, while you're working with the stone. And then afterwards, you can write that out. What will this stone help me to do? And trust your intuition. How does this stone want me to work with it? And then ask the stone, what kind of offerings can I make to you to help you be in the world? and then do that thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wants to be put on a windowsill. Maybe it wants to be returned to the sea. Whatever it is. Listening to that. And that's a way of developing your intuition. Doing those kinds of exercises and then trusting what comes up.
Goddamn brilliant. And I'm going to tell you what, while you were speaking, I just thought, what perfect medicine also for white folks who want to undo some of their white supremacy. Because a derive, you know, white supremacy will have you thinking, well, I don't have to ask to take this thing. I can take whatever I want to. There's no consciousness in, you know, a lot of white folks who use certain herbs, who engage with certain practices. But like that idea too, like what's in your space? Like why are you using it? And have you ever thought about it? You know, has there ever been a consciousness or a thoughtfulness about it? And then also how wonderful to be able to link into those pieces as well around these beautiful stones that so many of us are so blessed to have that are such offerings of the earth that we can tend to be a little bingy around from time to time. Maybe not bingy, but we can tend to, what's a better word for that? We can tend to be a little consumerist about crystals as well. So I love any invitation to be deeply intentional about your crystal or your stone, even in that regard, is such important work. I feel like what you just offered as an answer to that question is so beautifully crucial on a million levels, just really bowing to it.
Well, Lindsay Mack, I bow to you over and over and over again.
This
has been such a beautiful conversation. It's just been so gratifying to go into this deeply mysterious card and find so much treasure and richness in it. I know that all of our listeners are going to be desperate to know more about you and hear more about you and take classes with you and learn from you. So how can they do that?
Well, first of all, this has been such a delight. Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a gift. People can find me at lindsaymack.com. I'm always doing new offerings. They're always popping up here and there. I don't read anymore. I haven't been a reader for a little while. I just teach. And so offerings in that way. I have a podcast called Tarot for the Wild Soul. And I am at Wild Soul Healing on Instagram and not on there a ton. But when I am, I try to make it teachable. You know, I try to offer something on there. but yeah, those three spaces are where people can find me.
I know I am going to be tuning in for all of those. So thank you so much. And we'll see you between the worlds. Next week, please tune in because we have a very special treat for you. We've been talking a lot about wands as trees and emissaries of the plant realms. And next week, we'll be talking with Dr. David Delgado Shorter about the flower worlds of the Mesoamerican indigenous communities. These are powerful realms of healing and sacrifice. He did this work with the Yoemi elder Felipe Molina, and I am very, very excited to share this work with you. I know you're going to love it, so please do join us next week.
Between the Worlds is hosted by Amanda Yates Garcia and produced by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs with editing help from Jiha Lee. Our podcast icon is created by Maria Minnis, aka Tiny Parsnip, links in the show notes, and our font is created by Leah Hayes. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a sweet review and or posting your favorite parts. You can tag us at Oracle of LA or Between the Worlds Podcast. Thank you.
Turn your will towards your desire, fire guides you on, and lights the path and shines the way, call upon the suit of wands.